From the Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver. Welcome to the show. Today on the program, we will hear a funny story by American author and humorist Mark Twain. The celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County was his first major success as a writer. We also hear a report you may find funny about lying in American politics. But first, we go to Ann Ball for her report on a special press conference with Scott Kelly. The American astronaut spoke to reporters as he orbited on the International Space Station, hundreds of kilometers above Earth.
For nearly a year, American astronaut Scott Kelly has been living and working at the International Space Station with no running water. He told reporters Thursday that it is like camping in the woods for a year. He said the fact that everything floats up there makes daily life more difficult. It is somewhat of a harsh environment, he said. You don't feel perfectly normal. He and his Russian partner, Mikhail Kornienko, are scheduled to return to Earth March 1st. They will travel in a Russian spacecraft and land in Kazakhstan. Kelly said that he feels pretty good physically and that he could go another 100 days or longer if I had to. But the first thing he said he will do after NASA tests him is jump in his pool in Houston, Texas. He said the hardest part of the journey has been being isolated physically from people on the ground who are important to him. He said it has been a privilege to be on the ISS.
The space station here is a magical place. It's an incredible science facility we have. It's a privilege to fly here, and it's something that I hope more people will have the opportunity to do in the future. And I think we will. It's just a matter of time.
Kelly and Kornienko's station record, 340 days, is twice as long as a regular mission. The science behind the one-year mission was critical for NASA's Journey to Mars program. The space agency hopes to send humans to Mars by the 2030s. They are hiring people now to be astronauts on a Mars mission. As a veteran of 4 space flights, Kelly thinks going to Mars is possible.
I think there's nothing we can't accomplish that we don't, put our mind and our minds and our resources behind. So, after being here for so long, that's one thing I definitely realize that, if we can dream it, we can do it if we really want to.
After they touch down on Earth, Kelly said they will be carried in special chairs to a nearby tent. There, they will undergo tests to see what condition their bodies are in after spending that time in space. Biological studies began a year before the two men left Earth. Biological samples were collected and assessments were performed to be used as a baseline. For comparison, samples were taken during their time at the space station. They will continue for a year or more after their return to Earth. Kelly's identical twin brother, former NASA astronaut Mark Kelly, participated in parallel twin studies on Earth to give scientists more ways to study human spaceflight. Some questions will be how to deal with bone loss and radiation. Those will be issues for travelers to the planet Mars, because the trip will take at least 6 months. They will need to grow plants for food along the way. While in space, Scott Kelly and his fellow astronauts grew and then ate lettuce. They also grew flowers. That is important because some vegetable plants, like tomatoes, begin as flowers. Also important are the psychological and performance challenges. How will people handle living together in a small space? This is critical for crew traveling to Mars. Kelly said, it is important to offer private areas for astronauts for a trip to Mars. His space on the ISS was basically a box the size of a phone booth. The astronaut said he got through the long time by taking it in milestones. For example, he would look to the next crew change with astronauts leaving and coming, or the next science experiment. And the last milestone before heading home? It was doing major maintenance on the ISS water system. That happened yesterday. Over the last year, Kelly has taken beautiful pictures of the Earth and sent them out on social media. After looking down on the planet, he said, "The more I look at it, the more I feel like an environmentalist." He said, "There are definite areas where the Earth is covered in pollution all the time, and unexpected storms." He said, "This is a human effect, not naturally occurring." "We can fix that if we put our minds to it," Kelly said. Asked for advice for kids who want to be astronauts, Kelly said they need to be experts in a technical field. "It is important to do what you like," he said. "People also need to be well-rounded, because being an astronaut is many jobs in one. Engineer, medical doctor, plumber, and pilot are just some of the jobs an astronaut must perform." In the end, 20 years down the road, Scott Kelly said, "It is not the view or floating in space or riding the rocket of which he will be most proud. The thing he likes about the job is doing something he feels very passionate about, the extremely hard work." I'm Ann Ball.
Fact checkers are very busy in a presidential campaign season. Right now, they are examining the statements made by all the American candidates. The fact checkers say businessman Donald Trump is telling the most untruths. But he has plenty of competition. Here's Bruce Alpert with the story.
Did you know that U.S. General John Pershing shot 49 terrorists with bullets covered in pig's blood? No? But presidential candidate Donald Trump told that story to at least 2,000 people at a campaign rally recently. The story is nothing more than internet rumor, according to Snopes.com. It found nothing that documents the story about General John Pershing in the Philippines more than 100 years ago. Trump's story on General Pershing is one of a large number of untrue or unconfirmed statements from the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Is this an unusual campaign season? There is no scientific way to know if more lies are being told in this campaign than any other, according to Dartmouth College political scientist Brendan Nyhan. With that said, I think it is fair to say Donald Trump is going beyond norms for inaccuracy among top presidential candidates, he said. Telling a lie or falsehood is not new in American politics. Even the 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, known as Honest Abe, did not always tell the truth. He did not tell members of Congress about negotiations to end the Civil War in 1865, according to a 2014 James Conroy book on Lincoln. It is called Our One Common Country, Abraham Lincoln and the Hampton Roads Peace Conference of 1865. A newspaper backing John Adams for president in 1800 said that if his opponent, Thomas Jefferson, was elected, terrible things would happen. Murder, robbery, rape, adultery, and incest will be openly taught and practiced, the newspaper said. That information comes from the Miller Center at the University of Virginia. PolitiFact.org is a news site that studies and rates the accuracy of claims from government officials and political candidates. Among leading Republican presidential candidates, PolitiFact reviewed 93 statements from Trump and rated 77% of them as false. It rated 59% of Senator Ted Cruz's 79 statements and 42% of Senator Marco Rubio's 136 statements as false. Cruz is from Texas and Rubio from Florida. On the Democratic side, the site rated 28% of Hillary Clinton's 150 statements and 32% of Bernie Sanders' 64 claims as false. The website also has a pants on fire rating for the most inaccurate claims from the candidates. Trump again leads all candidates in this ranking. During his victory speech in New Hampshire in February, Trump called the 5% unemployment rate reported by the government as phony. He said, "The number's probably 28, 29, as high as 35. In fact, I even heard recently 42%. Not true, according to PolitiFact. Trump rejected PolitiFact's criticism. He said the group is a left-wing group and treats him unfairly. PolitiFact said it holds conservatives and liberals to the same fact-checking standards. During a January debate in Iowa, Senator Cruz claimed that President Barack Obama's health care program is the nation's biggest job killer. Not true, PolitiFact said. Not only has the number of jobs gone up, but the number of unwilling part-timers has gone down. In January, Senator Rubio said to the Meet the Press news program that he would not negotiate prisoner exchange with Iran. The Republican candidate said, "When I become president of the United States, it will be like Ronald Reagan, where as soon as he took office, the hostages were released from Iran." Not true, PolitiFact wrote. The Carter administration negotiated the deal months before Reagan's inauguration, without involvement by Reagan or his transition team. Rubio's claim is an imaginative rereading of history. PolitiFact labeled false Hillary Clinton's statement, "We now have more jobs in solar than we do in oil." And it also called false this statement by Bernie Sanders. Not one Republican has the guts to recognize that climate change is real. Lou Jacobson, a senior correspondent for PolitiFact, said some voters want candidates to tell the truth and do not like it when they do not. Other voters, however, do not always trust or believe reports that their candidate is not telling the truth, he said. Trump is not only delivering more false statements than his top competitors for president, he has been a victim of a few as well. Factcheck.org said this about a Ted Cruz advertisement saying Trump bulldozed the home of an elderly widow to build a parking lot for his New Jersey casino. The ad leaves the false impression that the widow lost her home, and she didn't, FactCheck said. What did happen was that a government agency acting on behalf of Trump tried to obtain the home, but the courts blocked them. I'm Bruce Alpert.
And now it's time for an American story. Today, Shep O'Neill brings us the celebrated jumping frog of Calaveras County. It was written in 1865 by celebrated author Mark Twain. Here is Shep O'Neill.
A friend of mine in the East asked me to visit old Simon Wheeler to ask about my friend's friend, Leonidas W. Smiley. I did as my friend asked me to do, and this story is the result. I found Simon Wheeler sleeping by the stove in the ruined mining camp of Angels. I saw that he was fat and had no hair and had a gentle and simple look upon his peaceful face. He woke up and gave me good day. I told him a friend had asked me to find out about a friend named Leonidas W. Smiley, who he heard was at one time living in Angel's Camp. I added that if Mr. Wheeler could tell me anything about this Leonidas W. Smiley, I would feel a great responsibility to him. Simon Wheeler forced me into a corner with his chair and began telling me this long story. He never smiled, he never frowned, but all through the endless story, there was a feeling of great seriousness and honesty. This showed me plainly that he thought the heroes of the story were men of great intelligence. I let him go on in his own way and never stopped him once. This is the story Simon Wheeler told.
Leonidas W. Well, there was a man here once by the name of Jim Smiley in the winter of 1849, or maybe it was the spring of 1850. Anyway, he was the strangest man. He was always making money on anything that turned up if he could get anybody to try to make money on the other side. And if he could not do that, he would change sides. And he was lucky, uncommon lucky. He most always was a winner. If there was a dog fight, he would try to win money on it. If there was a cat fight, he would take the risk. If there was a chicken fight, he would try to win money on it. Why, if there was two birds sitting on a fence, he would want you to decide which one would fly first so he could win money. Lots of the boys here have seen Nat Smiley and can tell you about him. Why, it did not matter to him. He would try to make money on anything. He was the most unusual man. Parson Walker's wife was very sick once for a long time, and it seemed as if they were not going to save her. But one morning, he come in. and Smiley asked him how his wife was, and he said she was better, thank God. And Smiley, before he thought, says, "Well, I'll risk my money. She will not get well." And Smiley had a little small dog. To look at the dog, you would think he was not worth anything but to sit around and look mean and look for a chance to steal something. But as soon as there was money, he was a different dog. Another dog might attack and throw him around two or three times. Then, all of a sudden, Smiley's dog would grab that other dog by his back leg and hang on till the men said it was over. Smiley always come out the winner on that dog, at least until he found a dog once that did not have any back legs. The dog's legs had been cut off in a machine. Well, the fighting continued long enough, and the money was gone. Then, when Smiley's dog come to make a grab the other dog's back legs, he saw in a minute how there was a problem. The other dog was going to win, and Smiley's dog looked surprised and did not try to win the fight anymore. He gave Smiley a look that said he was sorry for fighting a dog that did not have any back legs for him to hold, which he needed to win the fight. Then Smiley's dog walked away, laid down, and died. He was a good dog, and would have made a name for himself if he had lived, for he had intelligence. It always makes me feel sorry when I think of that last fight of his, and the way it turned out. Well, this Smiley had rats and chickens and cats and all of them kind of things. You could not get anything for him to risk money on, but he would match you. He caught a frog one day and took him home, and said he was going to educate the frog. And so he never done nothing for 3 months but sit in his backyard and teach that frog to jump. And you bet you he did teach him, too. He would give him a little hit from behind, and the next minute you would see that frog dancing in the air, and then come down all on his feet and all right, like a cat. Smiley got him so the frog was catching flies, and he would catch one of those insects every time. Smiley said all a frog wanted was education, and he could do almost anything. And I believe him. Why, I have seen him set Dan'l Webster down here on this floe, Dan'l Webster was the name of the frog, and sing out, "Flies, Dan'l, flies!" And quicker than you could shut your eyes, that frog would jump straight up and catch a fly off the table. Then he would fall down on the floe again, like a ball of dirt, and start rubbing the side of his head with his back foot, as if he had no idea he had been doing any more than any frog might do. You never seen a frog so honest and simple as he was, for all he was so skilled. And when it come to jumping, he could get over more ground in one jump than any animal of his kind that you ever saw. Smiley was very proud of his frog, and people who had traveled and been everywhere all said he was better than any frog they had ever seen. Well, one day a stranger came in and says to Smiley, "What might be that you have got in the box?" And Smiley says, "It's only just a frog." And the man took it and looked at it careful and turned it round this way and that and says, So it is. Well, what is he good for? Well, Smiley says, easy and careless, he can outjump any frog in Calaveras County. The man took the box again and took another long look and gave it back to Smiley and says, I don't see anything about that frog that is any better than any other frog. Maybe you don't, Smiley says. Maybe you understand frogs, and maybe you don't. Anyways, I will risk $40 and bet you that he can jump farther than any frog in Calaveras County. And the man studied a minute. Well, I'm only a stranger here, and I do not have a frog. But if I had a frog, I would risk my money on it. And then Smiley says, that's all right. If you will hold my box a minute, I will go and get you a frog. And so the man took the box and put up his $40 and sat down to wait. He sat there a long time, thinking and thinking. Then he got the frog out of the box. He filled its mouth full of bullets used to kill small birds. Then he put the frog on the floor. Now, Smiley had caught another frog and gave it to the man and said, now sit him next to Dan'l, and I will give the word. Then Smiley says, 1, 2, 3, go. And Smiley and the other man touched the frogs. The new frog jumped. Dan'l just lifted up his body, but could not move at all. He was planted like a building. Smiley was very surprised and angry, too, but he did not know what the problem was. The other man took the money and started away, and when he was going out the door, he looked back and said, well, I don't see anything about that frog that is any better than any other frog. Smiley stood looking down at Dan'l a long time, and at last says, I wonder what in the nation happened to that frog. I wonder if there's something wrong with him. And he picked up Dan'l and turned him upside down, and out came a whole lot of bullets. And Smiley was the angriest man. He set the frog down and took out after that man, but he never caught him. Now, Simon Wheeler heard his name called and got up to see what was wanted. He told me to wait, but I did not think that more stories about Jim Smiley would give me any more information about Leonidas W. Smiley, and so I started to walk away. At the door, I met Mr. Wheeler returning, and he started talking again. Well, this here Smiley had a yellow cow with one eye and no tail. However, lacking both time and interest, I did not wait to hear about the cow. I just left.
That was Shep O'Neill with The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County by Mark Twain. I'm Katie Weaver for VOA Learning English Weekend. Listen again tomorrow for more stories from around and maybe above the world.